Okay.
Brian, I'd like to be on Stack.
Then Brian, okay.
All right. Well, Robert's Rules of Order is, I think, pretty clear on the issue of what you can do when there isn't a quorum.
Badger, you got to speak up because we can't hear you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think Robert's Rules of Order is pretty clear on what you can do when there isn't a quorum. Okay? You can conduct business, but what you decide has to be ratified by a quorum.
Correct.
And if we open up the door to having smaller quorums, we're just opening up the door to bad things.
Correct.
Very bad things. And that goes for committees as well as everything else. So what, you know, I mean, we don't have a very collegial working arrangement on these boards, on these committees, on any of it.
Hello?
Okay. So
I'm losing you again, Vajay. I'm sorry.
A relatively smaller group of people say, well, we're pretty sure that everyone else will agree because we're all kind of on the same page. People are not on the same page. This is just asking for trouble.
Okay. Anyone want to speak for Ted's motion?
I have the
Brian,
reference.
Okay, Ted, cite the reference and then Brian.
Okay, page 336, line 9, quorum in boards and committees. In a committee of the whole or its variations, the quorum is the same as in the assembly unless the rules of the assembly or the organization, that is, either its bylaws or its rules of order, specify otherwise. In all other committees and in boards, the quorum is a majority of the members of the board or committee unless a different quorum is fixed, A, by the bylaws in the case of a board or standing committee that the bylaws specifically established, or by a rule of the parent body or organization, or by the motion establishing the particular committee.
Okay. So
it also says...
Ted, look, we're running out of time, and I want to give other people a chance to speak. Brian.
Thank you, Ted.
I think we're having a slightly academic conversation because of bylaws.
We're losing you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there you go. Now you're back.
Okay. I think we're having a slightly academic conversation because our bylaws do set quorum rules for committees. Under Article 8, Section 5, it says meetings and actions of committees shall be governed by and held and taken in accordance with the provisions of Article 6 of these bylaws, with such changes in the context of those sections as are necessary to substitute the committee and its members for the board of its members. Then Article 6 governs meetings of the board of directors. Article 6, Section 5 sets quorum as a majority. So, I mean, whatever we want to do, you got to revise the bylaws to do it.
Yeah.
We don't have latitude under Roberts. I mean, as a matter of general principles, I think the solution might actually be smaller committees so there's less onerous quorum requirements and so that board members aren't overcommitted trying to fill them all. But at any rate, it's not something we can recommend to the board short of a bylaws revision.
Anyone else want to speak to this? And how much time do we have, Sean?
1:37, sir.
Anyone else want to speak to that?
I don't accept the interpretation, but I'll let it go.
Okay.
Well, point of information, Mr. Chair,
yes,
the bylaws do supersede Robert's Rules of Order, correct?
Yeah, Article 16 of the bylaws, which set Roberts as the parliamentary authority, exempt any place in which Roberts contradicts the bylaws.
I got you. Thank you, Brett.
And we can't make a special rule that contradicts the bylaws either.
No, exactly.
Okay, so, Joe, the next one is follow-up to change the status rule for LSB members. Joe, do you have a motion or did you want a discussion? Joe, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. well, what this has to do with is, the motion we discussed here a month ago. It remains unimplemented because of questions around whether it, I guess there's two questions, whether it's applied retroactively and or whether the language, because it didn't have any have specific reference to the board member out of which, you know, the instance out of which it arose, the board member involved, Noel Hanrahan, somehow it didn't apply. So the motion passed by this committee and by the PNB remains unimplemented, and I guess there would be a be interested in a discussion about how to
didn't we pass another motion at the PNB to see to it that it was implemented specifically? I mean, that's my recollection.
Yeah, we did. We did pass the motion.
We passed, yeah, but that motion still, we brought it to the, unless I have my timelines wrong, we brought it to the LSB and they said, well, I don't see Noel Hanrahan's name here, and it's not retroactive because it's...
No, we definitely had that conversation on the PNB.
Right.
And the point was that, and we did pass it and insisted that it be done.
I think that one got tabled, the follow-up motion.
No. It didn't.
No, it didn't. We passed that.
The essence of it is that the KPFA-LSB has refused to implement it. So the question is, I think the fundamental question becomes, what does the PNB do when an LSB doesn't follow the PNB's directive?
I'll just say the KPFA-LSB hasn't had language of any second motion sent to us. So if there is
one, that
might
help clarify that. There wasn't a second motion. We ask you to follow the first motion.
Well, that is correct, actually, that the PNB did say, yes, we really meant it to apply in this particular case.
Okay, can you send that language to our LSB?
Yeah, I presume it's in the minutes.
No. That language, it came to the LSB twice, and the LSB has still ignored it.
They ignored it the second time?
No, we've only ever seen language from one motion.
I don't think that's correct.
Been at every LSB meeting.
Well, so
that doesn't matter. You can still get it wrong, Brian.
I think that the fundamental question remains because I don't think, number one, the second motion had Noel Hanrahan's name in it, which was an objection raised the first time it was objected to. And the question of retroactivity is also, you know, I think that it still merits discussion. I mean, the first motion should have been strong enough. Was clear enough. I mean, the clarification was,
Games play.
An embellishment on the first one.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, I don't want to discuss the question of whether or not that we had a second motion, because I know we did. And whether it got to the PNB or to the LSB, that I don't know, but we can see that it gets there. But the other question you raise about what do you do if an LSB doesn't want to do it, short of suing them, and there is a motion coming up in the PNB, hopefully at this next meeting, which says that the directors from that station, if the majority of the rest of the board decides, after hearing what they have to say, that they are in fact in violation of a direct order from the PNB, that they won't get to vote anymore until such time as that's fixed.
What?
That's in fact in front of the PNB at the next meeting.
Good.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And we can take this up with the PNB anyway. I will double check what exactly happened at the LSB level. But, make no bones about it. The LSB majority have made it very clear that they, it's essentially bringing up, in my view, arguments to evade implementing the bill, and have said, certainly the first time it came up, this LSB, the chair of the LSB, said this LSB is not doesn't have to take orders from the PNB. So, right. It doesn't matter how many motions the PNB passed, or what it said. They've expressed that.
I disagree with that narrative, Joe.
But it's,
well, that's okay.
We don't need to resolve that here.
That
happened, and there's several witnesses who can attest to that. But
there's also a recording of the meeting that can be referred.
Then let's listen to the recording.
Yeah, let's play it. Let's see what reality says.
Listen to the recording. But the point is that this has not been implemented by the KPFA-LSB, and the arguments they raised the first time around were without merit, regardless of what happened if there was, the second time around or not. So, nevertheless, if people don't want to discuss this now, I think we can take it up when the the PNB reviews the motion pending, and when I've double-checked the record.
Is that agreeable to everybody? We have a question for fact here. We can resolve that.
Brian, then Sean, then Brian.
I just find it ironic that we were just talking about the bylaws, and one thing the bylaws clearly lay out is that the LSBs are a subcommittee of the PNB. So for the LSB to say we don't have to listen to the PNB amounts to insubordination, okay? And, it, you know, like I said, it's just ironic that one minute we're all saying we got to fix the bylaws and follow them, but I guess this is something that is, what should I call it? We at the whim of the local boards? I mean, it's really an ironic argument. Thank you.
You're wonderful. Well said.
Brian?
Look, the bylaws create a hybrid structure. We're also delegates, and delegates are not at the whim of the PNB, and we're members of the LSB by virtue of being delegates. The question is one of eligibility for being delegates. Oh, I just wanted to be clear. Let me finish. Let me finish.
Yes, let Brian finish his comment.
I just want to be clear on the sequence of events that happened at our LSB. The PNB passed this motion that gave no indication it was to be applied retroactively or to be applied to this specific case. It was brought to our LSB. We decided that the LSB decided that that motion did not require any action on the part of the LSB. The only thing we got after that was a letter from Grace Aaron saying, here's how you should interpret the motion. And since there had been no change in the language the PNB approved, and no language actually approved by the majority of the PNB.
This is such games playing. This is sticking.
Sean, please.
We didn't take any further action on this.
Okay.
So as far as the local board is concerned, that's where this sits.
Okay. Let me say again that the PNB did, in fact, pass a very clear intent that the board act on the specific instance.
Great. Send us the language.
And we will do so, and I don't know why you haven't received it yet. Joe thinks that you did. So, those are all questions of fact which can be rather easily resolved.
Right.
And there's no motion before us, so I'd just like to move on to the next one. Okay, motion by program council. Joe, what's there, and do you have a specific motion, or what did you want to discuss?
Well, there've been two things around this. And I don't remember because it's been months since I put this on the agenda.
I know.
one aspect of it was I believe it was Ted Weisgall's motion, which didn't have a date, but maybe that's already been fixed at the PNB level. I can't remember. The other more general thing was having to do with I think this is strictly to be a discussion item. At this point, and I would be interested if there's maybe there's not time. Maybe we should do a different meeting when there's more time. I would like to get perspective from different stations on how their program councils operate, what the history is, and try to come to a place where we can harmonize those practices, how the program councils interact with the program director, and so on and so forth. Because there has been a history, particularly history at KBFA, which I think is a little different from the other stations. And so, you know, we may not have time to get into that now, but I think the idea was to sort of get perspectives and try to develop some discussion around that towards developing a network-wide policy.
May I speak to this?
Yes, Ted, go ahead.
I've put forth a motion that doesn't appear on this list of items 1 through 8, which gives the National Board an opportunity to hear from the chair of the local board when the meeting is held in that respective city, like in October here in Houston. And that would be, and it also allows for when the meetings are held in other cities, someone selected by the chair of the local board who is on the national board would give the report, and we don't have committee reports at the national level where each one of the local stations report. We have general managers reporting, but not LSBs. And I think this would address Joe's concern. Questions could be asked about how is your program council operating, and so on and so forth. So I'm not trying to jump the stack with an issue that will be brought, I guess, up at our next meeting. But I think that there's a lot of things that I don't want to say right now about the program council here in Houston. Hopefully some changes will occur in the near future that will make the situation better. And I'll stop there.
Okay. Joe, is it all right then if we move on to the next item?
Absolutely.
Does anyone else want to speak to this one? Okay.
I don't remember what I put on there, George.
Rules for filling vacant terms in LSBs?
Well, we addressed that last night here in Houston. So, Yeah. Let me say this. If someone were to be to fill a vacant seat and be placed on the local board now, I'm wondering how that affects their desire to run for one or two three-year terms. It seems to me that the National Election Supervisor has made an interpretation, but it's, to me, a very confusing one with this six-year limit and so on. I think it's going to be a real mess.
Brian here.
Brian, good.
I thought we discussed this two meetings ago.
Maybe we did.
The bylaws say you can serve a maximum of either you can serve a maximum of 2 3-year terms and in no event more than 6 years. And the way that's been interpreted in Pacifica is that if you're on for an incomplete term, you could, in theory, for instance, if you joined your board now with 3 months remaining in the term until new delegates are seated in November, you could, in theory, be running in this election, serve for 3 years, run in the next election, and serve for 2 years and 9 months, but you would have to, you would stop being a member of your board at the point you hit 6 years.
Yeah, that's a mess. And then another person serves for 3 months, and we decided last night that we weren't going to fill, we weren't going to post it, which to me was, I was the only one who voted against that. The board was unanimous in not posting the 3 month term that is now vacant.
Well,
violating the bylaws, in my opinion.
Well, the bylaws say the next alternate from the election fills the vacancy.
We don't have any left.
We had no more.
If you run out of alternates, you select a replacement.
Right, and the decision would have to be made at the next meeting, even if we found somebody who was willing to serve for 1 month. So there would serve for 1 month in December. In November, that would be the end of it. So
it becomes what's
kind
the point?
Exactly, and impractical, and we decided that.
I was sympathetic with the decision. I just didn't like abrogating the bylaws. I think the bylaws suck on this issue.
Okay, can we move on to the next one?
I wanted to flag a vacancies issue while we're on this.
Okay.
Maybe come up again during bylaws revisions. You know, it's really weird that we replace vacancies from an STV process by picking the next ranked person. Because frequently that means you're not following the will of the voters. There's something called countback in STV that would let you take all the votes that were counted towards the person who'd actually won and then reallocate them to the voters' next choices to choose the next person to fill the vacancy. And it's how several of the countries that use STV fill vacancies without going to a new election. I think in a revision of the bylaws, that should be done. I think it would reduce a lot of the gamesmanship around vacancies.
You mean We do that, and if you get more than the votes needed, the extra votes are passed down to the second and third or whatever.
Right, but check it out. The original STV vote creates your 9 winners in a listener election, and then the people who did not win ranked by whoever had the most vote when you cut off the 9 winners. You follow me?
Right, yes.
Okay, but let's say your first choice person drops off the board. Now, they take their votes with them under the system we use, whereas under the countback system, the votes that were counted to get that person elected would be reapportioned among all the people who didn't get elected to see who floats to the top.
Yeah. So it's
let me interject
basically
something, George.
What it ensures is that if anyone drops off, they're going to be replaced by someone who appealed to similar voters or similar constituencies. So there would probably be a lot less gamesmanship around trying to knock people off boards.
Well, here in Houston, we don't have that many candidates running this time. We only have 2 people who will lose. And let's say the one who finishes last only gets 1 vote, their own. They still would end up on the board.
They volunteered. So?
Anyway, I think the point, as I understand it, is that if you treat the line of succession as though the first place person was taken out of the original count, that's more consistent. That's consistent with the point of STV than to take just the lineup as it would be if that person was still in the thing.
And are those votes reallocated then when you take this first person out of the mix? Are those votes reallocated?
Yeah, what you do is you rerun the tabulation as if that person were not in the running.
Right.
Well, this is all.
So you get a different list. You can't take anybody off who's actually already been elected, but it may change the order of succession for who comes next.
Yeah, and Sean, for the stack.
Yeah,
Chris.
Okay. Because my big concern is we are getting people. We are so deep into our alternates now that we are getting, and this has only been alleged, I haven't checked it out, that, you know, some of our alternates are getting on the board with literally 3 or 4 votes. And, you know, to me, I mean, I want to represent minority viewpoints, but that's a bit extreme. So I would want to look at this count back thing. And as many of you know, I have just basic problems with proportional voting or STV voting. It may work great in the country or Providence, but I think it is completely lousy for boards. So anything that can help mitigate this, I'm very interested in.
Yeah, that's a... I'm sorry, Brian here.
I can't speak. There's no one else.
Chris, am I on the stack?
Oh, I didn't hear you, Chris. Go ahead. No, you're next.
I think that what we've just been listening to is an extended argument against STV voting itself. I think that it's an absurd system to have for a radio station. It works well in Australia, where I used to live. But it's just completely impractical. It's like driving a round peg through a square hole here. It just and it's not transparent.
Exactly.
It needs a priesthood. Needs a priesthood to be interpreted, and it needs to be something much, much simpler. You know, like normal voting.
This is
right.
Vajra. I want to be on the stack also.
Okay. So I heard Ted and then Vajra.
I think we're now just talking about the issue we raised earlier, and that's vetting the bylaws and revising the bylaws. And I hope we'll get into this issue at that time.
Brian, I had asked to be on stack.
Oh, okay. Brian, that's right, you did.
I'll just be quick. I think Ted and Sean raised really good points. You actually don't want your alternate system to put people on the board who the voters really clearly said they didn't want, just because they're the only ones who signed up when you had the election 2 years ago. I guess in addition to specifying a countback method, we could eventually create some bylaws that had some kind of threshold trigger that said, if you were below this level, you don't get on through any alternate system.
Right. Vajra?
Yeah. The STV voting system actually was I think, basically sold to us. I don't think it's very democratic. Everybody gets only one vote. It is not the system that Lonnie Guinier had proposed of weighted voting. It has been held responsible for the crashing and burning of community school boards in New York City. And even though people claim that it's worldwide, that's really, you know, when it's done in some parts of Australia, Ireland, Northern Ireland, and Malta, that's pushing the definition of around the world. It's
right.
Not a good system. It's not very democratic. We need something that will really make people's votes count.
Yes,
if there are nine seats to be filled, people should have nine votes at least. And if people want a weighted voting system, they can use the one Lonnie Guinier suggested, wherein you can give five of your votes to one and four to another, distribute them how you like. But the SCV system is really not democratic. It really does make it possible for very strange things to happen on boards, and we need to get rid of it.
Sounds like we do need to have a discussion about that particular bylaw.
Thank you, Vajra.
We have two more items. One of them is...
We're at time on this item, sir.
We are. I thought we were.
Are we at time for the meeting? Because I need...
We are. We've been typically adjourning at 10:15. Would anyone like to... extend the time to complete one or two of these other items.
What do we got left, sir?
I'm in New York City, and I have some place to be early tomorrow.
This is Ted, and it's my items, and I don't want to talk about them. I'm tired.
The only question is Chris Condon's policy on waivers of membership requirements.
Well, since it's not urgent and it won't affect this election, why don't we just push it over to the next governance meeting?
Confirming the time of and date of our next meeting. I know we've established it, but I just want to be sure.
The third Thursday of the next month.
And I move that we postpone the waivers issue until that meeting.
There's no need. We're out of time unless somebody wants to move to extend time.
I move to adjourn.
That isn't even necessary.
Yeah, we're done. That's
for right.
Okay.
Goodbye, George.
Thank you all. The meeting is, in fact, adjourned.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Pleasure hanging out with you all.
Yes, thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Good night.